Once more unto the breach, dear friends.
Else fall up the wall with our English dead.
Very nice.
I said that in my best.
I'm not really sure what accent it was. It was more like you had a mouthful of mashed potatoes than accent. But it was...
Else fill up the wall with our English dead. That's
there,
better.
There you go. That's pretty good. Quite nice. Yes, so welcome back to the second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach, where Jeff McClure may be heard to say...
That's interesting.
We have to say that at least once an episode. It's not generally an exciting moment, just something that we say. This is Jake McClure. Hopefully we're going to enlighten you this hour, prevent... Befuddlement. Usually that takes the form of befuddling. We are really good at de-obfuscating by obfuscating even more. That's, I think, part of the reason why economists go to school, is to clear up the confusion with an influx of more confusion. I actually hope that we are helping people be less confused. I joke about it, but sometimes I listen back to... things that we say, and I'm going, whoa, were there any single syllable words in that sentence? What were we doing? Yes, you look like you are pregnant with thought. Please.
I am. There's an important little bit of news that I think should be broadcast really loudly.
Okay. Should I turn the volume up?
There was, you know, retail sales dropped 1.1% last in July because of the Delta variant surge. In July, because of the Delta variant surge.
But we had a 0.7% increase in August.
That's what I was going to say. In August, the economists' consensus was it was going to drop another 0.7%, but it didn't drop 0.7%. It rose 0.7%, which doesn't sound like much until you multiply it times 12, and you realize the American consumer, who is the driver in our economy, which is a wonderful thing, by the way, despite words to the contrary. We're not export driven. The European economy is export driven. Their health and welfare depends on us buying stuff from them, basically. The Chinese economy is export driven. The Japanese economy is export driven. They're all dependent upon us buying stuff from them. They're dependent upon somebody else for the welfare of their economy, which is why there's an old saying among economists, if the United States sneezes, the rest of the world catches pneumonia. So, in the United States, our economy is primarily driven by us selling things to members of the United States, to citizens of the United States, people living in the United States. And when wages rise in the United States and spending rises in the United States, by the way, I think it's really fascinating if you notice that wages went up a gross 7% for the month, 0.7% for the month. And spending went up 0.7% for the month, which I don't think is a complete coincidence in light of the fact that I said last hour that people in the low wage brackets, and there's a lot of them, tend to spend the money they make pretty quickly. And that is the fuel that drives this economy forward. Now, if you see consumer spending and retail sales drop off across the board, that's a warning sign. It's a yellow flashing light on your dashboard, and you probably ought to be aware that something may be going wrong. But it didn't happen that way, even though it was expected to happen that way. We have an amazing economy. Jobless claims remain near the pandemic low. They were up a little bit. They were up 20,000, which is not much.
Right.
But all that 20,000.
Over last week's version, it's like 330,000 new.
Yeah.
New let goes, new layoffs.
But those were credited to Hurricane Ida. So Hurricane Ida is a come and go situation. We'll see it reversed in the near future. Despite all the gloom and doom, I want to emphasize something here. We have a very healthy economy. We have undoubtedly the healthiest economy in the world. A lot of people want to knock it down right now and say bad things about it because bad news sells clicks. Used to sell newspapers, but People don't buy newspapers much anymore.
They buy clicks.
They buy clicks. And people love to go and read bad news about the economy and about the United States and say it's all the fault of somebody. If you're a Democrat, it's the fault of the Republicans. And if you're a Republican, it's the fault of the Democrats.
Unless you're just a full across the board, I'm just an American, I don't care about that, then it's the fault of the Chinese. Right?
Yeah, I guess that would make sense.
It's always somebody else's fault is what we're trying to say.
Yeah. Well, the point is, you are living in the healthiest economy in the world. The total economy is running faster, better, deeper, healthier than it was before the pandemic. Even though we still have 5 million fewer people employed. Now, that we can talk about productivity and the theories of that all you want to, but the bottom line to it is our economy is now running faster than it ran when we had 5 million more people working.
Now, and can I put this in a different context?
Sure.
This will help. We talk, it has been a while, but we talk about something called emerging markets. What are they? Well, these are markets that are newly becoming available for our products and newly developing things that we want to buy. And it's generally a country that's going from, in some cases, the literal Stone Age, where they're using sticks and rocks to do things, to an industrial age where they're sitting in a factory somewhere, either pushing buttons or using machines to make things. That's a tremendous amount of earning growth between being in a field with a kind of sharpened stick and cutting through rice stalks or in a paddy, depending on what part of the growing season it is. I don't want to get too technical here. Is it technical or is it agricultural? Anyway,
I guess so.
They're cutting with sticks. You can't make a whole lot of rice compared to a machine when you're using a sharpened stick. You can make a lot of shoes, and suddenly that person, individual person's life is unimaginably improved as far as finance goes. And it's taking place across the whole country. So why am I bringing this up now when we're talking about our economy?
What's it got to do with making more shoes?
It has to do with making more shoes because that difference in productivity, and we're back to that word again, productivity is one of my favorite things in economics.
So you can make more shoes with machines than you can with people.
It's amazing, I know.
Okay, that's what you were trying to say.
Yes. So that explosive growth in new stuff required a person to be present to work that machine. So they took the person and they trained them. These are not dumb people. Just as a side note, people still have this weird concept that people that have worked in the field and haven't been educated are somehow less intelligent. And that's kind of crazy because we get massive amounts of innovation from these people as they become educated. They are just as intelligent as anybody else. The word stupid, by the way, comes from working in a field being stooped over. So somehow we still have that as a cultural context. In these emerging countries, these emerging markets, we get this explosive growth potential in their economy because we go from a relatively low-end technology to a relatively high-end technology. We are seeing that kind of growth in the American economy right now. Not because we're taking people out of the rice paddies and putting them into a factory. No, because we're bringing the factories back here and making machines do the whole work instead of just the work that a person told them to do. We're removing more people. The productivity is going up again. And I'm looking at like the returns of asset classes, and I see that the mid-cap growth area of our U.S. economy has way overtaken the growth of emerging markets.
I get you now. The guy was sticking a hole in the ground with a stick.
Yes.
And now we have machines doing the whole work and making the hole instead.
Yes. So that's the hole.
That's the whole work.
We come circle all the way around. The hole is now being made by a machine instead of a person. Yes.
That's a whole work. That's the whole work.
That's the whole work.
But you bring the whole back to the United States to make it.
Yes. And this is holy ground that we're talking about at that point.
Oh, yeah. Cool. I got it now. Okay. Yes.
So what I'm saying and what he's saying is that the growth that we're seeing in our economy right now, when we've been, you know, we've been talking about this for a year or more, when we've been talking about supply chain issues and bringing the supply chain home and automating, it's now been enough time that we're beginning to start the beginning of the start. That's how close to the beginning this is, to see some of the growth potential coming out of it. That, and it is really amazing. So the growth rates that we're expecting in the United States have just increased, and they're pandemic related, and it looks like this is a longer term increase into the future to say our ability to produce things cheaper here is much better. And just to kind of put this in perspective, transportation costs have come way, way down. That's the only reason why we could employ somebody in Thailand to make a computer chip for us and then ship it across the Pacific Ocean to be used in manufacturing here. Or, I mean, just think of how much it costs to go on vacation to Thailand or to Hawaii. It's expensive to get over there. And to bring something to the United States from there, we put it on these very, very large, very, very efficient ships. But they're still very, very large ships. They're still expensive to make it come across. It's just cheaper than what it used to be, and still cheaper than what it would cost to make it here. As soon as we are able to make it here with automation at the same cost that we were making it in Thailand, we don't make it in Thailand anymore. And suddenly the prices drop. So when people are talking about inflation fears and they're talking about the changes in growth rates and all of that, it's all interrelated. And when we talk about COVID-19 being the biggest elephant in any room, it's changing the way we do business more than just whether or not we want to wear a mask at a restaurant. A lot more than that. It is a fundamental shift in how the United States is doing business. And I don't know a better way of emphasizing that than the times, they're changing. I think there's some songs about that somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Somewhere. Can I give another piece of good news?
I don't know. We're going to lose all our listeners if we only talk about good stuff. Go ahead.
The U.S. budget deficit.
Uh-huh.
Was first 11 months of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Fiscal year for the federal government was $3 trillion. First 11 months of this year, $2.7 trillion. It improved by $3 trillion.
$300 billion.
$300 billion. I'm sorry. Yes. Close enough.
Yeah, billion, something trillion, like no big deal.
Income to the federal government in the first 11 months of this fiscal year rose 18%. That's
pretty good. Cool.
I mean, you don't hear about that a lot. I mean, you don't say, people are saying, oh, the deficit, the government.
Well, there's some, we spent a lot of money last year, and we're set to spend a lot of money next year. So it's not like our spending is actually going down.
But our income is going up.
But our income is going up, and that is a partially saving grace.
That is a tremendously accurate long-term measure of what's going on in the economy. If tax revenues go up, people are making more money.
Yes.
And they're paying taxes on it, which is really good news. The other thing that's happened, and I don't have the exact numbers on it in front of me right here. I was looking for them. I'm sure they're somewhere. Our trade deficit keeps going down. Each month that's come out, the last several months, our trade deficit drops. Although we're not, it's not that we're importing less stuff, we're exporting more stuff. And you know, that doesn't make headlines either, because it's good news, and people don't like to read good news. They like to read bad news. And sounds like I'm a cheerleader for the economy. I am actually a cheerleader for the economy at this point. I'm a cheerleader across the board for the economy. That doesn't mean that we might not have a correction at some point in the future when something happens bad. But I've in my 40 years, because I've been watching the economy pretty carefully for the last 40 years, I have never seen an economy growing like this that still had the potential to grow more. As a matter of fact, this rate of growth in the economy at any point in my experience as a financial professional would have been scary.
Yeah.
Because it would indicate that, oh no, we're about to go over the cliff.
Well, and we look at this and we have these conversations. Because if we saw this kind of growth rate in a market after the Great Recession, even, and the recovery time period of the Great Recession, if it had continued like this, we would have said this is too much too fast, way, 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 way too much too fast. We are saying that there could be a correction in the market at any point. But our long-term expectation in growth in revenue, growth in earnings, growth of the economy, we have just had some amazing shifts that are likely to add profitability to us for the foreseeable future. I wouldn't want to be in a place that is trying to manufacture parts for us in China. Because here's a conversation that's taking place in no boardrooms in the United States right now. Hey, let's move all our factories to China. Where just a couple of years ago, it was a normal conversation. It is not taking place in boardrooms, period, right now. People are not thinking about, hey, let's go invest a couple of billion dollars in a factory in China. It's just not. Zero. None. Anywhere. There's lots of people talking about building factories in the United States. There's Germans, there's Japanese, there's South Koreans. Get this, there's Chinese. Well, is Taiwan? Hold on. We're about to get into an area that might get us in trouble. What do you think? Should I say it?
We could get banned.
We could. We could get banned in China. We could
get a letter.
Not be able to show up at the UN to talk about this. I see Taiwan as a country. Oh, I said it. Now I'm in trouble. I probably am not allowed to visit China after this.
Probably you're going to be in trouble. We'll probably get a letter from the Chinese government.
And it's relatively serious. What I'm recognizing is a socioeconomic area that has different rules. Hong Kong used to be that too, and I can simply say Taiwan is Chinese, as is Hong Kong. And that might alleviate everything on the Chinese side. I consider that's all China. They have different regulatory authorities. That's the part that the Chinese are quibbling about. We have Taiwanese companies making manufacturing facilities in the United States. The enormity of that shift is really hard for me to explain to people. It's not an American company making a manufacturing facility in the United States to feed America. This is a Taiwanese company whose track record have been factories in Taiwan. Like, this is not a normal thing to make a factory somewhere else. This is strange. And they're making factories in the United States. Part of that is due to negotiations from the Trump administration that were carried on by the Biden administration. I know we don't talk fondly about the government almost at any point when we're talking about the president. We think they take way too much credit for the economy, for way too little input. And that doesn't matter if we're talking Biden, Trump, or whatever. This is a win for the United States, and it's based on Trump's initial negotiations being held up by the Biden administration. So how's that for weird? We're not going to be popular with anybody. We're giving compliments to the Democrats and the Republicans. It's all right. We'll give them insults later. All we're saying. I wish there's a way I could tell people how important this is. There is a shift, a complete change in the way business is being done. And I talked about this a few weeks back. What do you call next level of the information age, the next level of the industrial age. All of those things are happening right now, and we don't even have a name for it. And it's big, and maybe bigger, and we're seeing it in growth rates, bigger than the shift from the Stone Age to the industrial age. Because we can see that in real time, in real economies today. That's phenomenal to me. And I'll get off of this. I realize I'm an economist, and I'm going into crazy detail on how excited I am about a very, very esoteric concept that people maybe will hear about in the coming decade and say, oh, that's what Jake was talking about.
You really think they're going to remember what you said that long?
Hopefully. Probably not, though. They'll probably be like,
I don't think so.
I knew about this already. I thought this up back when I was listening to the radio one day.
The question is, which of the two people listening will remember it?
What were we just talking about again? I can't
remember. You got
remember.
It. Right.
I don't remember.
There's an interesting thing happening in the housing market that may have some application.
Cool.
Survey was done. Let's see who did the survey. Anyway, the University of Michigan surveyed consumers, which is the people who consume things and buy houses and so on, residences, and said, what do you think about buying a house at this point? And only 29% of the people said it's a good idea. Now, that without reference is nothing, but a year ago, it was up around 80%. And the last time it was at 29%, it was 1982, when we were tumbling into a recession and interest rates were double digit. Matter of fact, the 30-year fixed rate mortgage in 1982 was above 15%. That is an indication. We're going to take more than one indication, but it's a notice to people who are thinking about selling their house, thinking maybe the price will go up a little further. It sounds like their housing market is peaking.
Yeah. And what I'm seeing right now, I'm watching the Texas market, and I don't do this in as organized a fashion as I used to, but I just did a broad sweep. Seeing price drops in Houston, in Austin, in Dallas, and in Fort Worth. And that's partly because we're moving into fall. But when we haven't seen a drop in the housing market for multiple years at this part of the year, it says that there might be more to it. It may be that we're going back to a normally scheduled programming of people buying houses when they need a house and they're getting caught up on the houses or sick of hunting for houses that are too expensive. And that's what we are. Is it the peak? What do you think? You said they may be peaking?
I think they're peaking. There's a couple of, and I'm going to go out on a limb here.
It's
forecasting
a thick limb.
Interest rates and forecasting housing buying are generally not a particularly good thing to do, but I'm going to do them anyway.
Yeah, we have a quote from our radio program that was like the quote that was listed for all of advertisement and so on, where you said forecasting interest rates is a fool's game. Things as they are, interest rates should be going up over. So we are admitting completely. This is not an easy forecast, but I agree with it. Go ahead.
I really think that interest rates hit their bottom last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the 10-year treasury, which is the benchmark, is up 96%. The yield on the treasury is up 96% since last year. That is an indication that there was a distinct bottom last year. I think the 40-year bull market in bonds, which people didn't even realize, I mean, a lot of people invested in bonds for their entire working lifetime and didn't realize that there was such a thing as a bear market in bonds, but they happen. And I really think interest rates will start to rise. They have been rising for the last year, and that they will continue to rise into the next couple of years. And the reason I say that is we have a really healthy, strong driving economy. And the Fed is hinting that we're going to stop buying bonds on the open market. When they stop buying bonds on the open market, interest rates go up. And that sometime in 2023, they're going to start raising short-term interest rates, I think. That's, by the way, along with the consensus of everybody else. And I really think that we're going to see gradually rising interest rates. What does that mean? That means that if you haven't already refinanced your house and you're waiting for interest rates to go lower, not a good idea.
Yeah, one of the things, and I'll just point this out, interest rates right now, if you've got good credit and you don't want to spend money on points, these are numbers that come from what are being advertised right now. Best credit, 740 plus on your credit score. We're seeing around a 2.75% 30-year refinance rate. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about purchase rates, they tend to be slightly higher. So when we're looking at zero fees, you're talking about roughly 3.3%. So 3% was what was available 6 months ago for a new house. Now we're talking about 3.3. Good credit with no points. So there you go.
And refinance rates are up probably 0.5% from where they were a year ago.
Yeah.
So
unless you're in the VA, if you've got a VA loan available to you, that's still awesome. It's still amazing. So,
just, it's one of those things that if you're thinking long-term, as the interest rates go up on buying a house, the carrying costs to buy that house, the monthly payments go up. And that means that housing prices will probably stabilize about then. The other thing is builders across the country have been working their tails off trying to build new houses and trying to start new houses. And because they realize there's a hot housing market. And my personal observation is that there's a lot of new subdivisions being opened up and a lot of new houses being built. I don't think I'd want to live in most of them because they look like they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. But there's a lot of houses going up in a lot of places, and I think we will catch up with the demand within the next year or two. And then builders will do what they always do, and they'll keep building houses.
Yeah, and this is something, the housing starts. This is a thing that we follow. It's a leading economic indicator. Housing starts in July were up 7% from what they were the July before. Now, July is a bad time frame for housing starts last year. That was the end of the lockdown, but construction continued through that. And new housing continued through that. We actually saw in July of last year an above the pandemic rate housing start boom. So it's a good time to measure back because even though we're right at the end of that close down and people usually say, hey, watch out being measuring back a year when you're looking in the middle of the pandemic, we had a little boom in July of last year and we're still 7% above that. What does that mean? It means a lot of new houses are going to be hitting the market. What does that do to existing house prices? As long as the demand is higher than the supply, they'll just go up slower. As soon as the supply outpaces the demand, we're going to see housing prices start to fall. As we see interest rates go up, we're going to see housing prices start to fall because people don't buy houses on the sticker price. They buy it on what's the monthly payment. And when your interest rates go up, your monthly payment goes up for the same price. That means the price has to come down. People buy on monthly payments.
Same thing is true in cars, by the way.
Yeah.
The chip shortage is real, but there's chip factories being built in a lot of places. Intel's back in the business. They just said they were going to spend a whole bunch of billions of dollars building chip factories.
Samsung is building building a chip factory in Central Texas in the double-digit billions.
And that means that at some point, automobile manufacturers will have enough chips that they can start just manufacturing more automobiles, but they'll be able to take all those automobiles they've got there sitting there missing the one necessary chip.
We'll have so many chips that we'll be able to knock them off each other's shoulders again.
Yeah.
That's how many chips we're going to have.
Supply and demand still works, and it will continue to work, and there's a lag there. It takes a while to build chip factories. It takes a while to build houses. But we're getting there. And just be aware that the continued rise in the price of houses is not something we're going to see to infinity.
Right.
it's going to level off, and at some point
it always does. It always does, and we always have this conversation. Housing cycles tend to be longer than people are willing to remember. We had this conversation with people in 2004 and 2005 that the housing cycle will not continue upward forever. We were way ahead of the game on that one. I don't think the banks are going to allow another 07, 08 kind of loaning frenzy.
But builders, by definition, build.
Yes.
And they're building their crews up, and they're building houses, and they keep building houses until they run out of money. And the banks right now are desperate to lend money. I don't know if the bank in the non-banks are desperate to lend money because they got more money than they know what to do with. We will probably, no certainty about this, we'll probably get another housing bust. And I found the numbers for U.S. imports and exports. The U.S. import prices declined 0.3% in August, and export prices rose 0.4%. That doesn't sound like it's anything too terribly or shocking. It is important. It means that the stuff we're selling at a higher price, and the stuff we're buying and bringing in the United States is coming in at a lower price. That, believe it or not, is pretty important news. And even if you take out the price of oil, it's still, we've seen this rise in export prices and fall in import prices that's going on. Do I understand all the mechanics behind it? No, but I think it's a very, very good sign. If import prices are going up fast, inflation will continue to rise because the underlying stuff we're buying
is becoming more expensive.
The imported stuff, and almost anything you buy that's complex, there's something imported in it. In many cases, when you buy something at Walmart or Sam's or wherever, it was imported totally from someplace else. If those prices are dropping, that means they're producing more than we're buying, and they need to drop the price. And at the same time, if our export prices are rising, it means that the demand for quality U.S. goods and services overseas is rising. That isn't by itself earth-shaking in any one month, but it's one of those things that is important to note because it means it's a healthy sign. It's a really good sign. It's kind of like going to the doctor and getting your blood checked and find out you have low cholesterol. Cool.
That's good news.
It's like taking a stress test and find out that your heart is beating just fine and there's nothing wrong with your heart. It indicates that there's something not,
I think
it's
even
wrong.
Better, taking a stress test and they say, sir, you don't have any stress. Your stress test came back negative. You are just relaxed, sir. Yeah. So this is good news and unexpected.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't mean that prices for certain things are not going up.
Foods, feeds,
fuels, and beverages are going up. So if you go to the grocery store, you're going to see higher prices.
There is a danger. This is a longer term danger. What is the danger? Oh boy, now Jake's gotten into the bad news side of things.
Stranger danger.
We are a consumer economy. People hear us talking about that and explaining it, and they hopefully understand why it's a good thing to be a consuming-based economy rather than an export-based economy. You're self-sufficient. You consume what you make, and if you're importing stuff, it's a small amount. So we are a self-sufficient economy for the most part. There are things that we're not self-sufficient in that we are becoming more self-sufficient in. When we become self-sufficient in a way that we're not importing anymore, that we build these factories here and we don't need to ask the rest of the world for parts to make things because there's this big move to make it in the United States, we may long-term become an exporting nation, which is not what we want to do. While we are not comfortable, and I have to emphasize this really strongly, I am not comfortable with China being our entire source for everything that we buy. The old joke about, you know, God lives in China, right? You know that.
He does? No, I don't know that joke.
God made everything, right? And everything's made in China. So
God lives in China.
Right.
That makes sense.
And this joke, which was lighthearted and funny 5 years ago, 6 years ago, is now like, oh no, what does that mean? This is bad. the reality is that if we start making things here, then other people will be buying it, and we may shift our economy into a direction we don't want to go. And being export driven, we need to maintain our consumer base and continue to sell overseas. That's something that's harder to handle as a balance.
I really am going to take a minority view here. And probably we'll have some people unhappy with me about
it. Wait a minute. A minority out of two. Are we both going to be in the minority?
Of one.
Okay. The majority of us have a minority view. Go ahead.
Okay. I think it was intended when Henry Kissinger set up the official relationship with mainland China, communist China, red China. The intention was to make us the number one customer. And the reason is you don't go to war with your number one customer.
Right.
And at that point, the Chinese military and a lot of the bureaucracy in their foreign policy departments in China had concluded that a major world war with the United States was inevitable. There's still a minority of writers in China, apparently, who think that's true. But as it stands today, the Chinese economy is very, very, very dependent upon selling things to the United States. And one of the things I can tell you as a person who's been in business for a long time is you don't do things to make your number one customer really angry. And that may be one of the prime reasons that the Chinese have not invaded Taiwan, that they've not pushed harder to do things that we don't like, is simply because they gauge how much we tolerate it. And as long as they're dependent upon the dollar and dependent upon us buying their goods and services, it gives them good reason not to go to war. Right. If they ever get in the position where they're no longer dependent upon the United States to buy their stuff, we stop buying their stuff.
We lost a protection there, and that now we might have a hot war incident instead of a diplomatic trade issue.
And they'd love to get into that position, obviously, so that they could do things like take islands and countries in the Pacific that we don't think they should take. We did this with the Japanese, by the way. We imported a lot of things from the Japanese from before World War II, and we also exported a lot of things to Japan. And we set up what was, in essence, a economic blockade against Japan. We no longer would sell them things. We would no longer buy things from them before World War II.
And from the Japanese perspective, it was an act of war.
And it really hurt their economy. And they had their whole philosophy, their whole thought process in going to war in bombing Pearl Harbor and in taking the Philippines was, what do we got to lose? These guys have already economically blockaded us, which they consider to be an act of war. And we probably ought to be careful not to make that mistake again.
Yeah. So we could go too far on this.
Those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it.
I'm glad that you came in with that on the same subject. There's a long-term issue that we need to be aware of. It's not something that's part of a boardroom conversation in a corporate environment about factories. But it's something at a larger scale we need to be aware of, that if we remove all of the reason for China to regard our opinion favorably, they may not regard our opinion favorably. And we got to play some commercials.
And they may not in regard our commercials favorably.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got commercials to play. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you would like to join the conversation, the email addresses in here are jake@tpwc.com or jeff@tpwc.com, and we'll be back on the other side of these announcements. We are back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake McClure, and on the line with me, I have
Jeff McClure. We have the same last name.
Yeah, it's purely coincidental, I tell you. And my mother and your wife had nothing to do with it. Wait,
really?
Maybe she did.
Actually. I think she did. Yeah, I think I had something to do with it too.
Maybe minorly. Did you see that graph I was showing you during the
break? I did. That was impressive.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it meant, but it really looked impressive.
Lots of lines on a graph. Economists show each other graphs that are intended to be ultra confusing so that they can just flash it up and say, this is what I meant a few minutes ago. And the other economists all nod their heads because they don't want to be the one that says, what do your acronyms mean? So we've got about 10 minutes left in this episode for this week. And we have covered a bunch of stuff that we think are rather important. The economy seems to be in good shape, even with the Delta variant there in the United States. We're seeing a good baseline economic situation, something to be aware of. We've mentioned this before, but it's becoming headlines, so we get to mention it again. Lockdowns in China and in other places in Asia are causing factories to shut down even more. So even though we have this massive bright spotlight on the horizon that we can see a look ahead and say, hey, manufacturing is going to be better and we're not going to have shortages and blah, 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 blah. What about now, Jake? What about now, Jeff? Expect more shortages for a while. We're not through this yet. The parts of Asia that are having shutdowns have very little access to vaccine. Their only method for fighting this thing is to say, stop being next to each other. And when your job is being next to each other, it means you don't go to work. I know I'm speaking in baby talk. This is five-year-old speak for the economy is being shut down repeatedly in parts of China and in large chunks of Asia. Chinese economy, I'm not sure, may be in recession at this point. What would you say?
I don't know that they're in recession yet, but I know they're certainly not growing very fast. The forecast for their growth are still something around 6% this year, and ours is fluctuating up and down. The forecasts are running around 4-5% this year, although those forecasts are subject to massive change. But I think the Chinese are in danger of slipping into recession, and I think they know they're in danger of slipping into recession. That they're loosening up bank lending policies. They're saying bank reserves can be smaller. They basically are trying to pump some stimulus into their economy. That indicates that they are afraid of slipping into recession, too. There's a gigantic experiment going on, and I think that's what's important. The United States is doing things one way again, and the Chinese are doing it very differently. And it is one of those things that somewhere down the road, a lot of PhD dissertations will be written about the two different approaches to economics, the Chinese approach and the U.S. approach. Ours is chaotic, it's crazy, it's goofy. The 50 states are doing things 50 different ways. And basically, it's bottoms up, being driven primarily by the people who are doing it, by entrepreneurs. On the other end of the stick, the Chinese are trying to gain more central authority and control things more and more and more, right down to how many hours of computer game playing go on.
Yeah.
And I am prejudiced on this, but I think our system will win.
Well, we kind of hope you're prejudiced in a patriotic sense that says that you think our system is...
Well, there are people who would prefer to have the government dictate what books can be read and what how much computer game playing can go on.
Oh, I don't want the government to do it. I want to do it.
Oh.
Yeah. See, as long as the government's me, I'm okay with that. But as soon as somebody else is the government, no, we don't need to limit their power, please. I think that's the way we all feel to some extent. Republicans are about small government until they are the government, and then they're about big government, and Democrats are about big government until they are big government, and then they're really, really big government?
Okay. I wouldn't
say that that's necessarily true, but I'm a little facetious there. But I think you can see it was a good enough truism that you laughed about it.
There's something else that's going on in the economy that we've kind of mentioned in passing, but there's a really good article by Moody's in their regional finance review for July of 2021 that I thought really, really good article about productivity. And the article is headed at Miracle, the Post-Pandemic Productivity Boom, Miracle or Mirage. And they come to the conclusion, and I agree with it, by the way, so they're really smart because they agree with me, that we're having a productivity revolution go on in slow motion. Why? Because there's a shortage of workers. And when there's a shortage of workers and workers are becoming more expensive, throughout history, what we've done is innovate and automate. And companies are spending a record amount of money, at least since we've been keeping records on these things.
A record as long as there's records. But yes. Otherwise, not a record, just
we
record.
Don't know what was spent in the 1830s.
Well, then it's a new record.
It is. And the point is that they're spending a lot of money on automation, and this is important, intellectual property, software, to run their automation, to make things. And let me give you an example, a very concrete example of how you can see that happening. In the grocery store, the little grocery store we have here in Salado, at one end of the checkout line, there are four automated checkout stations with one person supervising them. Now, sometimes that doesn't work worth a hoot because nobody's there and the one person looks bored and everybody is over in the individual checkout lines. But as I've gone to other places and seen bigger stores, more and more what I'm seeing is that one person supervising four or eight checkout lines, the cashier for four or eight checkout lines, is doing just fine. And people are checking out. That used to take four or eight people plus a bagger for each of them in many cases. So it took 8 to 16 people to do the job that one person is doing right now. That's a productivity gain. We may not like that productivity gain because maybe you don't like to bag your own groceries. But that's a productivity gain, which means we can produce more and do more stuff and make more money in corporations and companies with fewer person hours involved in it. And I think that's a permanent change that's going on, and it's accelerating with the shortage of labor. The end result of that, by the way, throughout history has also been kind of interesting. There are some people who get displaced who refuse to come along. But the people who continue to work, generally speaking, see their wages, their welfare, and their general well-being go up. And I talked a little, if I could finish out with one thing. I talked a little earlier about the poverty rate. The poverty rate was reported by the Census Bureau to have risen to 11%, 11 point something percent. In fact, it dropped to 9.1 last year when you figure in let's give credit to them, the Republicans and President Trump passed some wonderful stimulus bills last year and gave a lot of money to a lot of people that weren't high income. And as a result, the poverty level dropped in the United States. Now, that money needs to be borrowed and paid for, which the same Republicans right now are objecting to, which seems to me a little weird. But it kept the poverty level from rising. It kept people's income from falling. It kept us out of a depression. And let me say, I think it was an excellent move and it was well done. Now, as we continue forward, I really see that we will continue to learn from this and move on. And I think we will gain from it and we're on the right track. Now, I'm one of a very small percentage of Americans who believe things are on the right track, but I believe things are on the right track. It's a bumpy track. It's got some twists and turns in it. But I think it's important to realize that when you it's kind of like Winston Churchill said about democracy, it's the worst form of government except for all the others. Right. And we're plowing ahead and things are getting better. they may not look like they're getting better. It would help if a lot more people got vaccinated, by the way. I wanted to make, if I could, one little comment about that. We have, last week in the United States, 1,415 people a day dying of COVID. Back at the beginning of July, it was 247 a day. Here in Bell County, in the last week, we've had 22 deaths. We had 34 the week before, 23 the week before that. And the people who are dying and filling up the hospitals, by every account, including the letter from the county judge and the mayor, the major towns in Bell County, the people who are in ICU and the people who are dying and the people who are filling up the hospitals are people who didn't get a vaccination. I know that some people are adamantly against getting a vaccination for some reason, but for the sake of our medical system and for the sake of everybody around you, I encourage you, and for the sake of the economy, I encourage you to get those vaccinations and to take care and to slow the spread of this disease down. That's the one wild card that I can't even begin to get my mind around, is if we got a further surge of this disease, it could do some severe damage to our economy and to the market. And that's my soapbox. Thank you very much. That was my editorial.
Thank you very much. Very nice.
Need to finish out the hour real quickly.
Yes. So if you would like to talk to us off the air, Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com. Until next week.